Hello, Matt.
Hey, Bill. Welcome back.
Thanks very much.
And congratulations.
Thanks to you and to Brian Butler, for holding down the fort while I was away on paternity leave.
Yes, congratulations. And I have to say, Blogging Heads offers a very, very generous compensation package and health care. And yes, and actually, you're allowed 3 weeks out with paternity leave, excuse me. But you know, you're back. You've rushed back to be here with us. Thank you. You're way tougher than Tony Blair.
But Alazny Pax, Shara Cher, is doing great. She's napping at the moment.
You know, your wife did all the hard work. I don't know, you know.
Both are napping at the moment, actually. but hopefully I can get her mug on screen at some point soon. But for those of you on Facebook, if you go to my page, you can see super, super cute shots of Alazny Pax on there.
Very cool. And that is awesome. We do look forward to seeing pictures and on Blogging Heads in a future episode.
Thank you, sir. So while I was gone, I missed our Blogging Heads colleague, David Frum, laying a smackdown on you. It's brutal.
Yeah, it was quite unusual. I mean, it had to do with a comment that I, you know, it's funny, you know, we do these Blogging Heads, and you know, they're pretty casual. Our episode, our show is called The Weekend Blog, so we don't really spend hours opining, or at least we try not to. We've been accused of that in the past, but generally speaking, we try not to talk too much about our opinions on issues, yada yada yada, but focus on what blogs are saying. So somebody had emailed me, part of the Blogging Heads community had emailed me and said, you know, Matt, I've heard you say before that so-and-so isn't a real conservative or isn't conservative. Can you define that? So just sort of off the cuff, you know, last week, I just very quickly went through, you know, I sort of referenced, was it Justice Potter Stevens or whomever who said the definition of pornography as I know it when I see it. I mentioned what I would call the sort of Ronald Reagan conservative, which is somebody who believes in, you know, lower taxes, strong national defense, and small government. And then I said, by the way, feel free to check out Russell Kirk on Wikipedia. He has the canons of conservatism. That apparently was a bad idea, according to Mr. Frum, because he lashed into me. Now, Bill, you can't see this, but I have here Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind, which, yes, Mr. Frum, I actually do own.
So Frum accused you of only basing your sense of conservatism on Wikipedia,
not the actual book. That's how I read it. And he sort of also made a flippant remark about how, well, it's an easy read. I mean, this is like War and Peace. I've read it. I would hope that all of our readers, all of our listeners and viewers would read it. But the truth is, you're more likely to go to Wikipedia if you just want to quickly understand the concept I was getting at. But for some reason, he sort of jumped on that, and I think implied, and this is interesting, as I started researching David Frum, his typical MO is to attack people's intelligence. That's sort of what he does, you know. And so I guess I'm honored to be among an elite group. You know, he's been critical in his very elitist way of Sarah Palin. He wrote a Newsweek piece bashing Rush Limbaugh, who is a true conservative, talking about him being, you know, a drug addict and his many marriages and all those things. And I also found out, you know, Frum accused me of, quote unquote, writing him out of conservatism, to which I would say only David Frum can write himself out of conservatism. I can't. But he, never mind conservatism, he's written people out of America. In 2003, he actually called Bob Novak and Pat Buchanan unpatriotic. So I am just honored to be among the long list of conservatives that David Frum has taken issue with. And to me, maybe the definition of a real conservative is somebody who's been attacked by David Frum.
Now, would you say that there is a broader dislike of David Frum's brand of conservatism among other conservative bloggers, or is this just sort of an idiosyncratic complaint that you have?
Well, I think there's two issues. One, there's this sort of whiny personality, which is just offensive and disturbing on a personal level. But putting that aside, I mean, I gave an interview to National Journal the other week. I was their profiled blogger, and they asked me, you know, who are the politicians you love? Who are the politicians you hate? And I told them that, frankly, it's the Democrats and liberals aren't the people who anger me most. It's the rhinos, because frankly, they can do more damage to the Republican Party, the conservative movement. And among the many books I brought along, I know you can't see this, Bill, is David Frum's book, Comeback. And if you read this book, you will see that essentially his cure for what ails the conservative movement is to become liberal. I utterly reject that theory, that principle.
Are there specific issues you think he is counseling capitulation on?
Here's a couple examples, whether it's the environment, embracing environmentalism. I mean, Newt Gingrich has made that same point. So, I mean, there's, you know, interesting things. He's very concerned about the growth of the Hispanic population, which is a legitimate concern. But, you know, rather than trying to persuade people through debate and intellectual discussion, I think he would pander to them. So, I mean, there's a wide variety. And, I mean, I've actually written – here's the funny thing, too. If you're interested, I've written over the years a lot about Frum, where I've specifically gone after a given column that he's written. But what struck me about this is – his recent sort of criticism and attacks on me, if you watch the Blogging Heads episode where I supposedly, you know, angered him, I didn't even mention him. At least I don't think I did. So for whatever reason...
I know you mentioned him to me in past dialogues.
I know I have, and yeah. I do not deny that. I've definitely mentioned him before. I've written about him many times over the years. However... I don't think I mentioned him this time, and I'm not sure why this set him off, because I don't believe I mentioned him, and yet it angered him enough to two times in 4 days go after me. Now, let me say this. I am actually hoping that this devolves into a full-scale, ugly scene, because if this is the Lincoln-Douglas debates, and it's 1858, and we're having the great debate over the future of conservatism, I have no doubt that he is the established Senator Douglas, and I am the up-and-comer Abraham Lincoln, who, frankly, will benefit from this.
He's trying on his own blog, and it's New Majority is his blog?
Oh, something like that, yeah. We can throw a link.
He started this blog in an attempt to try to refashion conservatism to regain its strength and broaden its appeal. Do you think the fact that he is taking shots at you... for the shots you're taking at him, what does that say about how well his project is going amongst other conservatives? Are other conservative bloggers, other elements of the conservative movement, are they getting behind what Frum is trying to accomplish on his blog?
Well, I mean, I don't think so. You know, there are people who believe in what David Frum believes in. Those people tend to be the elites, like David Brooks and Kathleen Parker. You know, the people who attacked Sarah Palin, the same people who, frankly, were very complimentary quite often of Barack Obama. But if you look at what I would call mainstream conservative blogs, which would be like American Spectator, Townhall.com, Red State, those people all hate David Frum. And so that's sort of – that hasn't changed. I don't know if this is a publicity stunt for him. Frankly, I hope it devolves and becomes quite ugly. I hope that this becomes like, you know, East Coast, West Coast, like – Biggie Smalls, Tupac. I mean, I really hope
Are you East or West?
I don't know, but I mean, you know, I'm using a metaphor here. Obviously, there won't be drive-bys, but maybe intellectual drive-bys, like the drive-by media that he's a part of. So, but no, I mean, here's the bottom line is that I think that there is a place for honest intellectual debate and discussion about the future of conservatism. Now, he was judging something I said in a two-minute span off the cuff on a show that has traditionally been a sort of a relaxed conversation between two friends, usually, who are on opposite ends of the political spectrum. And he took that out of context, and he's attempting to argue that, you know, and instead of saying he disagrees with my position, which is that the way for conservatives to win is to have bold colors, not pastels, to be like Ronald Reagan, Not like John McCain, who, by the way, was the most moderate Republican nominated, you know, in a long time and lost. We just, you know, philosophically disagree. But rather than having that intellectual debate and discussion with me and saying that Matt Lewis is wrong about this, he has to attack my intellect, imply that I've, you know, never read, you know, Kirk or Burke or Ayn Rand or, let's see, Modern Times. You want one? This is a very thick one. I think you should read this one, Bill. And we also have Milton Friedman, who's somebody that, frankly, I think Frum should become a little bit more acquainted with. But, you know, it's like the Bible. Just reading it isn't enough. You actually have to believe in conservatism. And intellectually ascending to it doesn't quite get you there. And so I think that I think I've said enough. Back to you, Bill.
Well, I look forward to round three, round four.
I hope so. Let's do our best to make this really nasty and really ugly. I'm not sure what.
You suck.
Yeah.
Bring it.
What if I won't do it today, but next time I will light on fire this copy of Comeback, or just rip it to shreds, something like that.
We haven't had a good book burning in a while.
Terrific. We haven't. So. And no, I wouldn't do that.
I'll refrain from making a Sarah Palin comment.
So anyway, that's the whole story. I mean, I think we've covered it pretty much. He's pretty much a jerk, and I'm pretty awesome. So that's it.
Well, the big story this week, the ugliest story this week, is the Holocaust Museum shooting.
Yeah.
And there's been a flurry of blog activity around that. There's been a argument laid out prior to this, primarily by David Neuwirth, who has long blogged at Orsonis and now blogs at Crooks and Liars as well, and also by Sarah Robinson, who she had joined Orsonis. She also blogs with my group, Campaign for America's Future, at ourfuture.org. And they had been talking for several months now that you can expect a rise in far-right extremist domestic terrorism, as you saw in the Clinton era, militia movements, Timothy McVeigh, Oklahoma City bombing, Waco, etc. After their work was done, there was a Department of Homeland Security report that got a lot of flack from conservative quarters, saying you should expect we're looking out for far-right domestic violence. And now you've had this shooting after the Dr. Tiller murder. And Sarah Robinson on ourfuture.org actually laid out six other instances that got less attention. So you're seeing a number of bloggers talk about how this is... this is a full-blown phenomena at this point. I have go a little bit deeper, but what David said, Crooks and Liars, violent characters like this are being driven mad with fear about what Obama and liberals are doing to the country. A lot of that fear is being stoked by mainstream sources, and the unstable characters like this sees that as an excuse to act. Sarah Robinson said at ourfuture.org, eight episodes of right-wing extremist violence in 4.5 months. If the conservative movement does not take a stand against these extremists, they may find that their silence will give permission to actions that are far worse. Given the number of Americans, both left and right, who are understandably and thoroughly disgusted with the corporatocracy and increasingly convinced that Congress is too corrupt to deliver even the basics to anyone who's not rich enough to write their problem on the back of a check, it is possible to imagine a right-wing populist movement that sucks large chunks of the frustrated, desperate working and middle classes into more and larger terrorist acts. And one last one for the moment, Talking Points memo, Josh Marshall, they actually dug up an old posting of James Von Brunn's that shows that he was a birther, someone who believes that Barack Obama was not born in America. One thing we learned about James Von Brunn is that he apparently was a birther. The great majority of the people who are into this stuff are just harmless wingers and nutballs, but this stuff clearly has also permeated the extremist fringe. This is clearly a piece with the rising right-wing extremism and fringe violence that, uncomfortably as it is to say, is rising in tandem in the early months of the Obama presidency. Now, I know, and I'm sure you have posts to this effect, that notion is being strenuously objected to by conservative bloggers.
I think what needs to happen is I think we need to immediately pass a law that would anybody, any conservative who speaks bad about Barack Obama or against, say, partial birth abortion should go to jail. I think clearly the time has arrived. This talk from conservatives is quite frightening. And I think clearly it's led several people over the edge. I think perhaps an Alien and Sedition Act might be in order. No, I mean, look, here's... First of all, I mean, I guess I would question what makes these people right-wing to begin with. Like, why are they being defined as right-wing? This goes to our from discussion and what is conservative? What is it about these people that makes them right-wing, not radicals, not revolutionary, but specifically the title right-wing?
Well, I'll give you a flip example. I would call the Unabomber a far-left domestic terrorist. Now, if I wanted to, I could look at his manifesto. He actually goes to great lengths to say that he's not a leftist. He has a whole section on how leftists are sort of psychologically inept and are utter failures. But the crux of his political argument, for what it's worth, has some overlap with other liberal critiques of society. Now, I'm not embracing the Unabomber Manifesto, even though I'm a liberal myself. I would strenuously object to positioning him as the face of liberalism. But I can acknowledge that on the ideological spectrum, broadly defined, he has arguments that have some overlap, and therefore you would say he was a far left extremist domestic terrorist, which is not the same as saying he is part and parcel of the liberal progressive movement.
You know what a lot of people don't know about the Unabomber, though, is he was listening to Ed Schultz's radio station when he was a radio host, and that provoked him to act. I think
if you believe it, you definitely have out of some corners of the conservative movement. World Net Daily, for example, is a very popular conservative site. They have been banging the drum that Obama is not legitimately president because he wasn't born in America. For months now, you have conservative Republicans who have legislation to change the laws that you have to have proof of your birth certificate to run for president now. And when you see far right extremists like this von Braun who articulate the same arguments and are articulating basic hatred. I'm sure this is the point that rubs conservatives the wrong way. Why should it be that you hate blacks and Jews? That means you're a conservative. And I don't think I'm not saying that, but I do think the history of racism and bigotry in this country comes from the far right, less from the far left. That's not to say that there's no such thing as hatred on the far left.
More Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Democrats.
This is not a partisan distinction.
Joseph Stalin killed more Jews probably than anybody next to maybe Hitler. I mean, I think it's insulting to equate that in any way to conservative philosophy. I think it's ironic that on a different, less controversial topic. I think it's ironic that the same people who say that violent movies and video games do not influence kids into crime somehow believe that adults are very influenced by conservative blogs and radio shows. I'm not sure how that works, but...
I am someone who has long argued that you should not blame, Judas Priest for what a crackpot does. I don't think it's fair to make a linear argument and say Bill O'Reilly said X, therefore Scott Roeder did Y. But I do think, and I would not argue that any of these people, I would argue that Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck or them are
Ozzy
legally Osbourne's culpable.
Suicide Solution.
What's that?
There's a great behind the music on that with Ozzy Osbourne talking about Suicide Solution.
Right.
And the line escapes me, so it's not funny, but maybe we can link to it.
These folks aren't legally culpable. You can't say that their utterance automatically made someone go nuts. But there are things happening at an aggregate level. There's been a blitz of demonization, I think, from conservative talk radio, from Fox News. I mean, when you have Bill O'Reilly calling Dr. Tiller a baby killer regularly, it certainly creates a climate that is troubling. And if these were just sort of individual lone acts, you could slough it off. When you have 8 instances of people saying similar things in a 4.5-month span, I would at least say it's in the conservative movement's interest to put more direct distance between these folks, to maybe ratchet back the intensity of the rhetoric to some degree.
Let me ask you, do you think that you could make a case, or that someone could make a case 2 years from now when there's been more shootings, or maybe there is a domestic terrorist act from a right-wing nut job? There could be a day when the public decides Rush Limbaugh really shouldn't be on the air. It is very dangerous to have him inciting things. And Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck, I know we have free speech and all that, but this has crossed the line. I think it's very, very dangerous to even think about things. I mean, when we talk about defending liberty and freedom.
And I've not heard anybody make that argument.
And let's look at any country that has lost their freedom. These sort of excuses have been made, you know, oh my gosh, there's been this emergency, and now we have to pass the Alien and Sedition Act. I mean, I'm very, very concerned about that, and we've talked about the potential knock at my door in previous episodes. But
when we talked about that, you know, there was a sense that the report that the Homeland Security report on potential far-right extremism, and they don't want potential far-left extremism as well. I mean, both things are possibilities and have happened in the course of history. This was sort of poo-pooed amongst mainstream conservatives as a political move by Obama's Homeland Security Department.
Well, think about it, though. It came out, I think, the day before the Tea Parties. And it specifically cited people who were returning military veterans, which is insulting, people who've out there fighting for their country. And it specifically cited people who have single issues that they're concerned about, like the pro-life movement. God help us from those pro-life people who want to actually defend life. And by the way,
but this is what actually,
almost all of them.
Scott Roeder was one of these people. Von Braun was a former vet. It's not to say every vet is a potential extremist. That's when you get into the realm of profiling and taking it to a fascist extreme. But
I think they were profiling when they wrote that DHS report. I think that's by definition, you know, what the. Let me point this out, though, because we talked about what a couple of liberal blogs were saying. There are conservative blogs. Leon Wolf at Red State has a post up chronicling all the things about this nut job who shot the security guard. Was it a security guard or a police officer? Or
security guard.
Security guard.
I believe that's my understanding.
It was horrible, obviously. So Leon Wolf was sort of chronicling it.
Where does he blog?
He's at Red State. One of the things he links to is the Examiner, who noted that this nut job hated Bush and McCain.
How many times have I talked? I mean, I'm not calling you a terrorist. I'm not calling Con Carroll, my past blogging partner, a terrorist.
Well, he actually is quite
dangerous. McCain all the time. It's not about partisan, it's about ideology.
Well, the other thing is, too, what's wrong with theworld.net noted that this guy hated Christians. So if you talk about what are sort of stereotypically you would think of as maybe a mainstream conservative, typically Christian, not always, but typically. Typically someone who may have supported Bush and or McCain. But yet, you know, we have people like Matthew Iglesias who are talking about, quote, the outbreak of right-wing domestic terrorism. I think they are politicizing these horrible events, and it's quite frightening, actually.
I mean, in my opinion, you know, the nomenclature of this is a little less important than, I don't have an interest in having the conservative movement be seen as part and parcel of these domestic terrorists. but I think it is somewhat blind. I mean, same way, I don't think that we should be maligning the entire Islamic religion and every Muslim for the acts of Al-Qaeda. But you'd be blind to say there were that.
So you are comparing us to terrorists right now. You know that, right?
I'm comparing you to Muslims.
Oh, okay.
Which is not an insult.
No, you're right. Actually, your analogy is not terribly off. I will say this though. I think that, I mean, would you admit this? Would you admit that there are some liberal bloggers who are attempting to use this for political purposes to paint all conservatives?
I would frame it a little bit differently because I don't want to unfairly malign, you know, my brother.
To extend your analogy, they're trying to make a connection between 9/11 and Iraq.
Yeah, I think there is a belief among a lot of liberals, and I think you see this in blogs, that there is a closer connection to inherent conservative ideology and what these domestic terrorists are doing. I do think that is being. I don't necessarily think that David and Sarah have done that. Sarah in particular is sort of trying to give this advice, say, hey, conservatives, you know, this is your moment to put some clear separation here. But I have heard anecdotally from people, not necessarily on blogs, that I think there is a feeling that there is a much closer connection to these things. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But at the same time, I don't think that the leading lights of conservatism, Rush, O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, etc., they're doing almost everything they possibly could to make it seem like there's a closer connection. You know, instead of O'Reilly just clearly condemning this killer, he spent days and days, you know, having a pity party, that everything he said about George Tiller was on the up and up and totally fair and not recognize that he said a lot of very incendiary. When you call
George Tiller
was
a baby killer,
legal, that's very incendiary.
I think he was by definition a baby killer. I don't think it's incendiary. I think it's a statement of fact. But I don't want to kill him. You know what? I don't think killing adults is right, and I don't think killing babies is right. That's an entirely consistent philosophy, if you ask me. So I don't think that O'Reilly has any responsibility for what some nut job did.
I don't think he has responsibility. I think that's taking it too far. I think for the sake of conservatism, I think it's in conservatives' interest, because let's face it, I think you'd be blind to not recognize that there is an increase in this sort of domestic terrorism. And there is some overlap in the types of things that these extremists are saying and what certain conservatives are saying. You know, you might be a birther. You might say, I really believe Obama is not a legitimate president, but I wouldn't kill people because of it. But there are people like von Braun who are using those arguments.
What kind of name was that anyway?
So it's in your interest to put some clear separation between what you're doing, what these extremists are doing. And I don't think a lot of conservatives are doing that. They're being much more defensive about it.
I'll have to pay closer attention. I've been too focused on David Frum in the last couple hours. All right, so we've had it. We've talked about Mr. Frum. We've talked about the tragedy yesterday. So we're going to talk about healthcare now, right?
Sorry, less gruesome topic, what I noticed, you know, I've been sort of out of it past couple of weeks on maternity leave, but when I started delving back into blogs this week, I noticed a clearer coalescing around support for the public plan option healthcare reform proposal that the president has backed, that the Coalition Healthcare for America Now has pushed very strongly. My group, Campaign for America's Future, is a part of that coalition. And that's a big difference, I think, than a few months ago, when I don't think healthcare was on a lot of bloggers' radar just yet. And to the extent that it was, most bloggers I saw were still pounding the single-payer argument that there should be no private insurance. And any proposal that allows private insurance to exist still is going to fall short. And that, I thought, potentially was going to deprive a more plausible legislative proposal like public plan option from getting a lot of grassroots momentum. But what I saw this past week, you have MC Joan at Daily Kos, you had a couple of bloggers at Fire Dog Lake, Scarecrow and Eli. You had one of I'm missing here. I had in mind. Huffington Post in particular. Huffington Post's Ryan Grimm, you know, really took a big shot at Third Way for putting forth a neutered version of public plan option. And it was notable to me that Huffington Post was putting in journalistic resources into making a distinction between what would be a robust public plan option and what would be a weak version. So I think that all has been somewhat sparked by Howard Dean coming up for public plan option, Howard Dean having a lot of street cred with a lot of progressive grassroots folks. That sort of made people say, okay, even I'm really for single payer, I understand that this is still a pretty good compromise. It still gets me a good deal of where I want to go. Now you have a much clearer fight ahead between having a good public plan option that would allow a government-sponsored public insurance plan to compete fairly with existing private plans, as long as those private plans adhere to a good standard, versus what the insurance lobby is angling for, which is what they call an individual mandate, that everyone would be legally obliged to buy insurance, but there would be no choice of a public plan. You would legally have to buy what private insurers are offering. And that's where the fight is shaping up to be. And I think if you thought that's where we would be, even the day after Obama was elected, it's worlds ahead of where anyone thought this debate would go a few months ago. I think bloggers are a little late to the party, quite frankly, but the fact that that some key bloggers are on it now, I think it might help juice some grassroots momentum, as this debate heats up.
My take is that the public plan option is a Trojan horse. You mentioned that the government-sponsored plan would compete with the private plan, but isn't that sort of like when that Washington team used to always play the Harlem Globetrotters? My take is the government-sponsored plan, which, by the way, would be sponsored with my tax dollars, would be cheaper and arguably better. And eventually nobody would go with the private plan because how can you compete with government? It's a rigged game. You can't win. And so isn't this just a Trojan horse to sort of look like it's a compromise, look like it's a common sense? Well, we're not going to force you into the single payer plan. You can still have the private plan if you choose. But the truth is over time, it's an incremental process. Everybody will be in the government plan. Isn't that really the goal? And frankly, it's smart politics and pragmatic bloggers. Liberals should probably get behind it.
I think Trojan horse is fair. I do think there are advocates who have said, there are people that like single payer who are very diehard about it. There are people who think that government shouldn't be involved in healthcare. It should be totally private. Let's have it out. Let's have that competition and let individuals and employers choose what's going to work best. If you ended up with everyone choosing the public plan, so be it. It would be a choice. It wouldn't be forced on people.
Right, but it's a false choice. It is.
They're choosing because it's better, because it's less expensive and providing quality coverage. Why is that a bad
outcome? But it's a rigged game. How can a private insurance company that has to rely on charging fees, they exist in the real world, they exist in the free market, how can they compete with a government subsidized, well, never mind government, subsidized by my tax dollars with a plan that subsidized? They can't. So this is a bogus point. You guys can call it the public plan option, and you can tell people they have the choice to go with a private plan, but really everybody's going to go with the government plan because the government is like the Harlem Globetrotters. They're rigged to win this game. You can't fight
City Hall. You're basically saying
Of course,
our private coverage is not good enough to be appealing.
No,
I mean, the conservative argument usually is government inherently sucks. It can't do anything right. It's incompetent. It's bureaucratic.
You're going to be in line for like 3 months to get a new spleen. It's going to be horrible coverage. But what I'm talking about
is, why would everyone choose it if it's going to be harmful?
Because the price will be a lot lower. It's going to be a lot less expensive, and frankly, I think that over time, it will. This is my argument here is.
Wouldn't its crappiness become evident after a few years that it was just like getting a cheap toy at Walmart? You would find out, hey, Walmart toys suck. They're full of poisonous Chinese materials.
Look,
I'll go buy a nicer toy now.
Once big government gets bigger, it never gets smaller. You never roll back new bureaucracies and new giveaways. So it's just not going to happen. This is a very clever incremental way to socialize another part of, you know, the American economic system. And rather than sounding radical or sounding extreme, which the American people would rise up against as they did in the Clinton years, you can actually pass it by sounding moderate and, well, we're going to give people choices. I think that's what's at play here. But that's just, you know, again, that's my opinion.
Well, I mean, you are having right now, where the debate is resting right now is how do you structure a public plan? And I don't think that, I mean, I definitely think there are liberals who would be perfectly happy to see this be a transitory step to single payer, but done by the voting of people's feet. There are other people that I think would be perfectly happy to see a sustained public-private balance. And so what a lot of the debate is happening right now is how do you construct a proper level playing field so no one's undermining the other? I mean, you could have, I think, an overly subsidized government plan that would make it impossible for private insurers to compete. But what's being talked about mainly, I believe, is not a straight-up subsidized public plan, but one that is paid for by premiums the same way that private insurance is. To the extent that there would be subsidies or be under a certain income level, that I believe would also apply to private insurance as well. So it wouldn't be something that only the public plan would take advantage of.
You trust the government a lot more than I do.
What's that?
I think you trust the government a lot more than I do.
Well, if it was a different, I wouldn't be a liberal, you wouldn't be a conservative. But,
amen to that. I'll drink to that.
But my point is, I think most of the policymakers crafting this right now are not interested in anything remotely like a Trojan horse. They're trying to find the parameters that would make for a level playing field. And what you're seeing folks on the left say is, hey, don't rig this in favor of private insurance. Don't have this. Don't make this a totally crappy public plan that no one would ever possibly want. And can't do what it can do to drive down healthcare costs for everybody to create the kind of savings we need not to have a fiscal train wreck. You had a post over at Wonk Room, Igor Volsky, who's their chief healthcare blogger. Ken Conrad proposed something that wouldn't be a robust public plan, but would have a series of nonprofit healthcare cooperatives. And Igor wrote, presumably, Conrad's co-ops would act more like healthcare plans and less like health insurance exchanges. Unlike the traditional co-op, which strives to give its members a choice of plans, Conrad's co-op might either self-insure or contract out to a third-party administrator, but state-based or regional co-op health plans would be unable to exert the purchasing power of a Medicare-like public option, whereas a public healthcare plan could use Medicare's leverage and Medicare-like prices to negotiate lower prices through the miracle of head-to-head competition with private plans, push insurance companies to negotiate more aggressively with providers, and dramatically lower healthcare spending, a cooperative would likely lack the clout to demand lower prices. So that's a vision where it's not trying to undercut private insurance. It's a vision where you're trying to drive down the cost of insurance overall, public or private. That's the real holy grail here, because the outside of the immorality of having 50 million people uninsured, we have a fiscal problem with the rising healthcare costs that affect everybody, no matter what kind of coverage you have. So the most pragmatic argument for the public plan option is a way to drive down costs. If you have a Democrat like Conrad proposing something else to try to appease conservatives, say, hey, it's not going to be too much government, but you're making it impossible to do what we need to do, drive down costs. That's the kind of thing that liberals are going to say, that's just rigging the game for private insurance, and it's going to hurt everybody. So I don't like the fact that Karen's pushing that plan out, but I think it does speak to a genuine desire amongst most folks in Congress to find something that would be fair competition across the board, not something that would be tarred with being a Trojan horse.
All right.
Should we leave it on that note?
Let's leave it there. You need to go spend some time with that baby.
I do.
And I need to get back. I've got a very, very thick volume here that I'm reading. I've got a lot of reading to do ahead of me because I clearly have gotten all my news from Wikipedia. So I must become better read.
Have you gone to David Frum's Wikipedia entry?
I just updated it 5 minutes ago. You'd be surprised at things I learned about him. It's quite... Wow. I mean, his activities in Canada were very disturbing. That'll be another topic.
Well, it's good to be back with you.
Yeah, man.
Back for another edition of the Weekend Blog.
Welcome back. Very good to have you back.
Oh, so should we kick up our TWIB Twitter next week?
We should. Let's put everybody on notice that we'll officially be announcing our Twitter handle, our username, and we will start following us, and we'll start following back. And we'll start actually tweeting stuff, more importantly.
Excellent.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.